Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, and this is the midweek flagship edition of the PW Torch Livecast for Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. I hosted Monday night solo after Raw, took calls, had some good conversation about Raw and Backlash with callers on Monday night. That show's available on our podcast feed. Last night, Pat McNeil joined me for some SmackDown talk immediately after SmackDown aired. That show also available on our podcast feed. And today, with the midweek flagship, we have Travis Bryant, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and host of the East Coast Cast. Without further ado, let's bring Travis into the conversation. Welcome to the show, Travis.
What's happening, Wade? Livecast audience, what up?
Good to have you back on. No shortage of things to talk about with TakeOver, Backlash, Raw, SmackDown, and developments for upcoming pay-per-views, Extreme Rules, and Money in the Bank. Jinder Mahal, sure to be a topic of conversation today, and I want to start with that, Travis. I ran a poll on pwtorch.com and asked, I ran a poll on our Twitter feed, at pwtorch, I should say, and well over 500 votes in, and 70% giving a thumbs up to Jinder Mahal's title reign. First, your thoughts on that response, and second, where do you stand on Jinder Mahal's title? Well, actually, it's down to 68% now, but more than two-thirds in favor. In fact, a full one-third very in favor. 33% say that, 35% somewhat in favor, 15% somewhat against, but 17% very against, and that's with 787 votes in.
That's surprising.
And
why, in a positive way for Jinder.
Yeah. So it surprises you that people are liking what they see or accepting of this big push.
Yeah. And I think that, in a way, that says something a little bit against Orton, like in his kind of just their title run, which, you know, wasn't really even a run. Excuse me. Thumbs up for Jinder, and especially, you know, Torch reaches a wide audience, but you would think they're, you know, a little more discerning and aware, and for them to, you know, overwhelmingly be pro this move is surprising. I personally, I'd be in that third option you said, somewhat against. It's just, I don't think it's justified, you know, his win-loss record, his positioning weeks before, and his skill in the ring and on the mic. But he's not dreadful by any stretch. He's not bad. He's, you know, it's, hopefully he can be, you know, JBL, what JBL was in 05, except, or whatever that was, 04, except JBL had just so many more things going for him, including a promo game that, you know, was kind of unmatched at times back then.
I think Jinder is not, like, the least qualified world champion in the history of pro wrestling. But I think from a storyline standpoint,
yeah.
The people who are against it, I think the people who are against it are against it for a couple main reasons. One, they see him being rewarded for having giant trapezius muscles. Like just, and some people think, hey, he deserves to be rewarded. He changed his diet. He got serious about working out. He made that a top priority over everything else. He won over management with that. But other people go, wait a second, is this sending the wrong message to the roster that if you, do what it takes, look this way, and we're going to give you a fresh look. That said, that's not enough. I mean, there's guys with really good physiques that WWE would never think of pushing at this level. Jinder's been around in WWE system going back to 2010. And yes, he did have a year or two off on the indie scene and then returned last year. But he's not like wholly unqualified in terms of in-ring work. He's done a lot of in-ring work. They're familiar with him and all that. But I think there's also a sense of he's getting to move ahead in line and get this big push because he has Indian heritage. His dad's from India. And that they're using him as a way to get into a new market. Now, a lot of people would say, hooray, that's been done. Bruce Mitchell texted me. He's like, you know, these people are all up in arms. This has been done forever. You hire a star or promote a star to the top to attract a certain demographic just because it happens to be across the ocean is no different than if it happened to be, you know, across state lines or in a new territory or just a segment of the population within your own territory. But I think some people look at this as, this isn't on the usual merits of getting pushed to the top. The standards for him were different. Do you think that captures it? I'll say the third reason people are against it, because there is a third reason, is what you mentioned. There's no win. There's not a series of wins. There wasn't a proper story told to build the foundation to make his rise believable. It feels arbitrary. Like, if we're just going to decide he's a winner, we're going to flip that switch overnight and just push him that way, and we expect you to accept it because it's all a show. It's all entertainment. It's all about casting. It's not about that sports-like credibility of building that foundation that this guy is at a world title level. Do you think hit the three categories, and or is there other categories, and what do you think is causing most people to be against him? Who are against him, the one third?
Those are about the things, and that second one is it's pretty rich, you know, that, you know, and, you know, just the history of Western society, all of a sudden people would be up in arms. Hey, this guy's getting rewarded because of his racial background. How dare they? You know, it's ironic in a lot of ways. But I think most people just that don't like it or are somewhat against it, maybe it's just because it's the category I fall in. And it's just storyline-wise, it just, again, like kind of like you said, it just feels arbitrary. It feels, where'd this guy come from? We saw him with Russo. He was the fall guy in that team. You know, nothing changed with him except the venue, the brand, I should say. And all of a sudden, it just doesn't make storyline sense. It doesn't make... who's losing to this guy all of a sudden?
Yeah, and I, you know, you can tell a heel storyline, which is as soon as the Singh brothers, the Bollywood boys, showed up, they gave him the edge that he needed to start winning more often,
yeah.
And that's heelish. You know, you can't win fair and square on an even playing field, so you tilt the field.
Yeah, he didn't
and
start winning a bunch of clean matches.
Well, that's yes, and well, maybe this sheds new light on that Jack Swagger win way back, Travis. Maybe that was the beginning of his hot streak. That mysterious victory over Jack Swagger out of nowhere before Jack Swagger was the big acquisition that Shane McMahon signed that then led nowhere. But anyway, so it's interesting. We have an email, and I mean, I think I'm kind of surprised in a way that this question is even being asked, as if it's a topic maybe that we hadn't talked about. But Trevor D., from Crown Point, Indiana, says, do you think Jinder's push has anything to do with Impact's attempt to get into the Indian market? Was watching Impact 2 weeks ago, and Josh Matthews was bragging about how they're the first company to broadcast live from India. I guess that's framing it a new way, which is, Travis, do you think WWE is accelerating this move in order to try to get an edge on what Impact might be trying to do to get into India? The idea of, you know, the first to plant their flag in the territory in the modern era as the pro wrestling promotion might have an advantage, so WWE is accelerating this.
That's absolutely possible. I didn't think of it that way. I don't pay attention to TNA to know that was said, but I do know, obviously, they have a history of, you know, half a decade at this point of running shows in India, King Dakar,
yeah.
Or Rang Dakar, or whatever the promotion was, a few years ago. Yeah, but I just think they would do it anyway. I think it's money to be made, and I don't think they're afraid of Impact getting a foothold because they're the brand. Like, I just don't think they're even like, sure, go ahead, get your little TV deal. And when the big money comes along, if you don't think that they're going to be willing to face your little lawsuits and stuff to get out of those contracts or screw you in some way, because here we come. I mean, they did it with ECW back in 99 on TNN, just bullied them out right out of the way. So it's, and that was, you know, almost 20 years ago, and they're bigger and stronger, more recognizable now. It really, I don't think, would matter.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
Yeah, I don't think Impact. I don't think Impact has a lot to do with WWE's moves. I just don't think they're big enough. But you know, I think it's possible that, you know, Vince heard about that and it might have triggered a series of thoughts of, well, you know, let's not wait on this. Let's go with this sooner. The other thing is it's May, and May is not a big month in the professional wrestling calendar typically. I think Vince feels he has a little bit of room to experiment a little bit and do something that maybe is off the normal path of what's, quote, best for the main roster, best for domestic business, best for the established business, and to roll the dice, take a chance, and throw something out there that might benefit them internationally, especially in India, and have it not greatly affect WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, the normal way of going about things. Now, Randy, they announced last night, gets his rematch in St. Louis at Money in the Bank. Do you expect that this Jinder Mahal run is open to lasting a while if it seems the crowd is reacting well to Jinder, which, by the way, so far, he's getting main event reactions. People aren't lethargic. They're not ambivalent towards him. He's getting reactions. Like, people, the fans who are going to these shows seem to be reacting to him as if they're accepting him. And I think that's sort of reflected in our poll, too. Is it possible Jinder holds a title for quite a while, or are you leaning towards Randy getting the belt right away, or something in between? Randy loses a rematch, but then someone else beats Jinder before SummerSlam.
I'm not sure. I can't really call it. I had these, you know, I talked about JBL. He's getting the title earlier in the year. I think JBL got it in July or June or something of that year. And held it until WrestleMania. Like, I don't think it's going to be anything that far. Like, I don't see Jinder Mahal dropping the title to AJ Styles or Shinsuke Nakamura or something at WrestleMania come April. But I don't see Orton getting it back, because again, it wasn't great. It wasn't a necessarily memorable few weeks of an Orton championship reign.
I'm with you. I don't think that...
And in that time, SmackDown ratings didn't do great.
Yeah, I think that it's not a given at all. I think it's a tough call. I don't think that it's real obvious which direction they're going. And I actually think, given the fact that the decision to put the belt on Jinder from multiple accounts, including my sources in WWE, was finalized the afternoon of the show. So I think Vince was kind of hedging on the pace of this, or whether to really go through with it, or how to do it. I think this is Jinder's spot to earn for a while. There's no doubt everything that I hear within WWE is coming out of WWE is positive about Jinder. I'm hearing from wrestlers that they're happy for him. There's not resentment of, who does this guy think he is? I think people know he's, quote, paid his dues for the last 7 years in WWE, mostly. When he got let go, he stayed active on the indie scene, which is sometimes a real sign of commitment that management is looking for, that they don't want wrestlers who are only willing to work under the glamorous lifestyle of WWE. If they let you go and you go remake yourself and work an aggressive indie schedule and take things into your own hands, that's not seen as a negative, like, how dare you work for somebody else. It's seen as a positive. So there's not a lot of forces that I'm sensing against Jinder succeeding. And I think once we get past, what I'm waiting to see, Travis, is that he needs to have either a really strong series of matches, or at least a couple, where, and Randy's not going to provide it. Maybe AJ last week was a clue to what he can do, which I think is ambiguous. I don't know if what we've seen with Jinder so far, even at his best, is enough in the modern era to be the guy that you want concluding house shows as a top heel. But I don't think what we've seen on the mic, what we've heard from him on the microphone, is good enough yet. That's where my main concern is. He's got the look. He carries himself with a certain demeanor. I think he's in this kind of in-between zone of, can he cut it? Will he be accepted? Can he carry main event spots on TV, main event matches on pay-per-views? And he's right in this middle where he could teeter either way into, nope, he's not progressing enough, this isn't going to work, or, yeah, he just hits the threshold, and because of the other things working for him, his size, his build, being from India, being a professional behind the scenes, and being different, a different kind of act that's part of wrestling's, the fabric of wrestling's history, that all kind of tilts him in favor of keeping the belt. I'm fascinated because I think it could go either way, and I think that's why neither of us are really sure of whether this ends at Money in the Bank and he moves down a notch or two, or continues on perhaps to SummerSlam.
Yeah, he has to hope, you know, for his, you know, money and his spot and, you know, just his success, that Vince is determined. This is one of those things where Vince is going to go, nope, I'm done. You know, and we're not here 3 weeks from now going, oh, well, that was fun, or 6 weeks from then and going, oh, wow, Jinder's not even on any show, or he's losing in the opening match of this show, and it's going to be fun to go week by week, because, you know, people are going to have strong opinions, and it seems like the tide's shifting, so that's also fun to track.
I think you're onto something, though, when you say Orton.
What if the rug gets pulled from under Jinder, and then the same people who were bitching and moaning 3 and 4 weeks ago are just like, oh, Vince, here he goes again, they're all like, yeah, free my man Jinder, you know, kind of attitude.
I mean, it seems like they're taking the Bret Hart approach, where he's going to be the babyface in India and a heel in the United States, because he's not, I mean, yes, the Bollywood boys are interfering, and that by definition makes him a heel. He's getting, someone is cheating on his behalf to help him get ahead, and there's no place in the world that the instinct of the ticket buying pro wrestling public is, yeah, I want to root for someone who represents everything that makes me upset and bitter in life, that cheaters get ahead and the hardworking, honest person doesn't. That is not going to work in pro wrestling, but being from India might override that in India. It might offset it enough that it's not a main concern. And so I think they're kind of taking the approach of, yeah, he'll be a hero in India and a villain in the United States if and when, you know, they actually go there and start trying to make money. And the pace of that is unknown. Anyway, Tris, let me cut to a break. When we come back, we'll introduce emails and phone calls and other topics of conversation. It's not just all Jinder all the time. A lot of stuff happened this weekend, so we'll hit on other topics too. So we'll be back right after this with that. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back. This is the PW Torch Livecast midweek flagship, where we talk about a broad array of issues. And Travis Bryant, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, is my guest. And later in the show, I want to talk to Travis about his column in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which will be going online for VIP members this afternoon, about the state of NXT's refreshed main event roster. So we'll cover that later. If you want to give us a call to talk about anything in pro wrestling, the number 515-605-9345. We also have an email, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. But let's introduce a phone call into the conversation and see what Deshaun in California has to say today. Deshaun, thanks for calling. You're on with Travis and Wade. What's up?
Hey, what's up? Actually, you know, I'm Sean from Chicago. I just have a Chicago number.
Oh, okay. So you are Sean or Deshaun?
Yeah. Sean, F-E-A-N.
Okay. I'm glad you cleared that up. Cool.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I didn't want to call you the wrong name all the time. Yep.
So I want to start off, I don't want to go too much into the gender thing, but I actually want to tie that in with something, but I'll start off with Nakamura. I think people are just, he's had two matches, and I think people really going a little crazy saying he needs to do something different with push, and I know we're all nervous about how he'll be pushed, but I think he's doing just fine. I know he didn't look very good against Dolph Ziggler, and the match wasn't good. I think he should have had a match against a main roster guy a while before that. He should have debuted on SmackDown before Backlash, because I think it was nerves and how he worked with people. Because in that Kevin Owens match last night, he did pretty good. He looked like Nakamura, and it looked good. He got beat up a little in that, too, but he's got to sell for these guys, too. They can't look weak, and he can't come in and dominate. Because then it when someone comes in and dominates, it kind of makes me feel like John Cena or Roman Reigns when someone comes in and dominates too much, you know? It just feels like, oh, here we go again with this guy that's a super saiyan. It can't be stopped, you know? Which kind of ties into the Jinder Mahal thing. I know he doesn't have a backstory. We all know that. But it's out of nowhere. And we all know he's doing behind the scenes and in front of us to do what he needs to do to get over, which is more than what I can say for Roman Reigns, you know? And it adds a little bit more legitimacy to him that he wasn't even... Roman Reigns has been shoved down our throats for like 4 years. You know, and Jinder Mahal has just been shoved down our throats for a few months, and he's more over. So I want to get your opinion on that, and I want to tie that in with Jinder's his title reign. How that kind of ties in with the UFC. Now, if you think Jinder Mahal's title reign is a joke, you got Biz Bing that's out now, and you got Cody Garbrandt that's not going to fight. Was rumored that he was hurt and not going to fight anyway at the next UFC event. So,
they waited to cancel the fight until after the tickets went on sale last week, which is, even though he was talking about his bad back, so I don't know. That's suspicious.
It is. And I mean, if you got an illegitimate champion, I mean, Jinder's far more legitimate than a Roman Reigns that's never gotten over with us. And you got Bisping that he doesn't want to fight now because we know he'll get knocked out. And you got GSP returning to get title fights, and then now he needs to wait, you know. So I just want you to get your take on that about legitimacy of those title reigns and all of that.
Well, one thing I got to say, Sean, is Michael Bisping's on his way to being the longest reigning middleweight champion. Of course, he won't defend the title ever, but he's the longest reigning. you're not following Michael Bisping if you're defending him at this point. My God, he's wants to
no,
fight.
No, I'm not. I'm not defending
no,
him.
No, I know you're not. I'm talking about Travis saying cheap. But Travis, yeah, your thoughts on what Sean had to say about Jinder.
Well, you got to put me back on, Wade.
You are on. We can hear you, Travis.
Oh, crap. This whole time, I didn't hear the beep.
You hear hearing you laugh and utter and, yeah, utterances.
I don't have a ton about the UFC and the comparing the legitimacies of those championships. But the, like, Roman wins his matches for the most part.
Right.
So, I mean, over is not a reason to, you know, talking about legitimacy. I mean, it's all, we obviously know, you know, kayfabe, all that. But that point.
Hey, Travis, let me pause. I'm going to interrupt. Let me pause you, because people say, well, since it's fake, sure. You don't need to. It's like, who cares if it's credible? It's like, you that is this kayfabe is dead is used to, and I know you're not, but everybody, so many people say, oh, kayfabe is dead because kayfabe's dead. All this other stuff doesn't matter. And it's like, all this other stuff still matters. You have to have a foundation of credibility built up within the story that you're telling, just as any show would that's dramatized and scripted about a sport. I mean, this is a dramatized, scripted, ongoing, you know, live-action soap opera that's supposed to simulate a sport. The fact that people know the match outcomes are predetermined and the fights are cooperations between the two competitors or multi-competitors doesn't mean you shouldn't have a solid foundation of storytelling to explain why somebody suddenly who lost all the time we're now supposed to take seriously as a world title guy. And I hear that so much, like, well, it doesn't matter because it's fake. And it's like, no, it absolutely matters because you're telling stories and you want your stories to have credibility.
Yeah, actually it matters more because it is scripted. And you can't fall back on, well, that was a bad game. People have bad games, or, you know, you threw four interceptions or whatever. So you kind of should pay attention to that even more. But, I don't remember the beginning of Sean's question.
Well, Sean, it was so long ago, we've forgotten. What haven't we addressed about Jim?
I'm sorry. Nakamura. Just people. Think people are panicking on Nakamura.
Okay.
He just debuted.
Sean, I don't mean to cut you off, but you don't have to repeat your whole question. Once you said Nakamura, it all flooded back into our brains. Travis, are you panicked about Nakamura? What do you think of his progress the last Sunday and Tuesday?
Panicked? No. But I wasn't a fan of the match that he had with Dolph Ziggler. I didn't think it was a particularly good match. And Sean's right. Like, Nakamura shouldn't necessarily, dominate. I guess maybe it depends how you define dominate. Like, he should win his matches. Yes, that's what I think he should do. But, you know, in those matches, it's a wrestling match. There's give and take. He's not Braun Strowman where you can just get punched and, you know, stand there and look at the guy. So, of course, I'm not panicked. It just wasn't a good match with Dolph Ziggler. And good match in quotes. It was a perfectly fine match. It just wasn't great. Expectations were, for me personally, were huge because of the opponent they gave him. I thought Ziggler would go in there and give him just knockdown, drag-out match, and it just was a lot of knockdown, not a lot of, whatever the analogy is. That's how I feel about that.
All right, good. I want to ask you about, the second part of Trevor's email from Crown Point, Indiana. He said, do you think WWE will change their outlook on Breezango and maybe give them a title run? I, for one, have been entertained by their character development and in-ring work. Will Vince change his mind about them and give them a reign before New Day comes back? I also, Travis, sent you an email that I got that was taken exception with your take on them on the VIP roundtable that Todd Martin, you and I did on Sunday night. This came from Jesse, who said, I was so frustrated listening to your Backlash roundtable, I had to write in. Travis is ripping into the Breezango match, and it reminded me of the many times that one of your contributors proclaims that something is bad, definitely, even if the fans enjoy it. Usually I find it annoying, but I can skip forward until they're done. But this one really got me. I thought the Breezango match, antics and all, was great. It felt like a modern comedy match, like something I could go down the road at PWG or in the Temple. I live in LA. It made me realize that Vince McMahon is right about what wrestling should be. Entertainment. He's just not very good at executing it because he had a terrible sense of humor. But there's definitely a place for something that Travis would decry as stupid on a three-hour show filled with otherwise serious matches. I think Tyler Breeze was actually putting in the best work of his main roster run in that match, and the fans were eating it up. And when he was doing the rolling back and forth spot, I was laughing so hard I had to leave the room. Too many critics, all of whom seem to have podcasts, as obnoxiously strident about what wrestling is when they don't realize that what it should be is entertaining. For me, Tyler Breeze fending off an attacker with a dirty mop is equally valid a form of wrestling as the DIY breakup from the previous night, if they're executed correctly. At a time when WWE's hemorrhaging viewers, while indie promotions worldwide continue to pick up steam, don't you think it's wise to create as diverse a card as possible and feature many different forms of wrestling? Travis, just you can respond to those emails, but also just kind of in general, Breezango, it seemed to work with the crowd on Sunday. Todd and I were sort of reluctantly feeling each other out of, is it okay to say we kind of got a kick out of it, even if we have reservations? I don't think everything that the crowd reacts positively to is necessarily the right thing to do or the best thing for wrestling. And I can get into that on, as far as like this kind of thing goes. But undeniably, I think the crowd was eating up what they did, and it was a lower card match. And then they added some follow-up since we last talked about it on Tuesday with what they did last night. So your thoughts on that feedback and what you saw last night as a follow-up to Sunday?
Yeah, I still don't like it. And I still think it was stupid what they did on Sunday with the mop and all the gimmicks and costumes. I saw the people laughing and whooping it up in the crowd and getting a kick out of it. And I still then and now think it was stupid. And yeah, I didn't laugh. I didn't whoop it up. Like, it's a tag team title match on a pay-per-view, and we're doing, like he says it, like comedy stuff.
What if they remove
the tag
titles?
A modern comedy match? I mean, I don't know what that means. It was just a comedy match, period.
What if it's not for the tag titles? Does that make a difference? I'm just trying to...
Then why is it on pay-per-view? Just like a grudge match, I guess?
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of matches that aren't title matches. But that, well, does that match not offend you, but do you have something...
It doesn't.
Like,
I mean, it's not about being offended. It's like, I just sat here and was like, well, this is dumb. And then I said that on the thing. Like, okay, how does that affect anyone else's
but here's
enjoyment of a thing, because somebody else vehemently doesn't like it?
No, and here's the thing. Everybody has opinions, and some are, you know, one direction, some the other.
Vince McMahon is right about what wrestling should be. Entertainment. Like, that's the thing the guy writes in his email, Jesse. Vince McMahon is right about what wrestling should be. Entertainment. He's just not very good at it because he has a terrible sense of humor. That's the rest of the cool. But
let me just say this. Every single promoter and every single pro wrestling company in all of history prior to the invention of the ridiculous term sports entertainment, which, by the way, other industries use to talk about entertainment in sports, like the Harlem Globetrotters. That doesn't involve a ring. It doesn't involve pro wrestlers. There's no lineage to the NWA and Lou Thesz. And they are sports entertainment because it's a worked form of sport to entertain people. The term is not just applying to what Vince McMahon does, and it's not a term he owns. It's just so stupid. But anyway, my larger point is every wrestling promoter in all of history has known that he had to entertain his fans by providing entertainment. It's such a ludicrous notion that pro wrestling was ever not entertainment. The reason it became a work...
You wouldn't be there if it wasn't entertaining.
Right, the reason it became a work was because it wasn't entertaining to watch two people in a three-hour match roll on the mat and hold each other in a hold that they couldn't get out of. So they decided, hey, we've got something here. People know who we are. If you put our face on a poster, people think we're the baddest asses in the country, in the world, and people will pay to see us. But if we want to keep making money, we better make this a little more entertaining. How about we cooperate a little bit to add some drama? And that evolved over the course of 100 years into what we have now, 100-plus years. So this notion that, well, Vince understands pro wrestling has to be entertainment, are you kidding me? Every promoter, every single wrestling promoter has made their number one goal to be to entertain the fans. The question is it more entertaining to have a guy using a mop as a weapon and mopping the ring and then rolling back and forth in a comedy spot, or is it more entertaining to see Johnny Gargano react to Tommaso Ciampa turning on him the way that he did? Is it more entertaining to see ha-ha humor or serious competition? And I'm just, it's a pet peeve when people use the term entertainment to describe things that aren't serious pro wrestling storytelling, because to me, that's what headlines WrestleMania for a reason, because that's the most entertaining part of this business.
Right. Those two things aren't the same. Like, you can go as far as to say, like, comedy and, you know, silly gimmicks and, you know, lighthearted stuff has its place on wrestling cards, because it certainly does. I'm not Mr. Friggin', like he says, what? I like headlocks, 15-minute long headlock matches. Like, okay, now you're just, you know, being mean. It's like, no, that's not me. Just misrepresenting who I am. But the comedy stuff does has its place. But those two things aren't the same. Johnny Gargano, the angle at TakeOver, and this throwaway ha ha match on the B pay per view aren't the same thing. And but he does make a point in his email. He says Tyler Breeze is actually. He says I think Tyler Breeze is putting the best work of his main roster run. And I think that goes to the point that yeah, and he shouldn't be stuck with a wig on and doing grandma drop kicks.
And
because he's doing the best work of his.
I agree.
Whatever.
I agree. I think he can be utilized better. I hope this is a conduit to him getting to being given a fresh look and doing more. I'll respond to one of the comments in the email, which is, well, if it gets over the crowd, then that means it's the right thing to do. There's a lot of things you can do in the short run to get a crowd reaction with shock value and ha-ha humor that undercuts what you're trying to do later in the show in the matches that actually drew people to spend $80 on a ticket or watch on the network. Not everything that's going to get a reaction from the crowd is actually... is actually prudent to do, because it can undercut the foundation of the narrative structure, for lack of a better term, of wrestling matches and what works. Why, if the Usos are going to be a badass tag team who have an edge to them, and there's a sense of, as Fandango and Tyler Breeze reacted last week on SmackDown, fear when they cut a promo and say what they're going to do to you. If they're going to have that kind of credibility, why would one of the Usos, I can't remember which one it was, climb to the top rope, see Tyler Breeze rolling away, and decide, well, I'm still going to go through with the top rope move. I'm just going to do it on the other side of the ring. And then he goes over there, and Tyler Breeze rolls out of the way. At this point,
he does it again, like, two more times.
Right.
It's not that he just did it once.
I know, but after twice, if not after once, much less four, if we're going to take the Usos seriously as having any kind of sense... He's got to think to himself, it's dangerous and hurts if I do a splash and I land on the mat instead of on a body. That will reverse the momentum of a match. The tag team titles are at stake. Clearly, Tyler Breeze is not injured enough for me to take a chance to leap off the top rope, because he's showing me he is not so knocked out that he won't roll out of the way. So why would he keep thinking, I'm going to do this move? Now, some people are rolling their eyes going, oh, it's just pro wrestling, you're taking it too seriously. But I guarantee you, there are wrestlers who have drawn big money, who are on the roster right now, who are rolling their eyes at that spot, going, how is anything we're supposed to do later in the show to be taken seriously if a serious tag team like the Usos are dumbing themselves down and acting in a way that would hurt their chances to retain the tag team titles just to get some laughs, some knee-slapping laughs from the crowd? You don't, if it's a Chikara show, that's one thing. But it's not. And WWE, there is a foundation to how you react to certain circumstances. And so there is some short-term gain. Oh, what fun. Everybody laughed. But you're undercutting the rest of the card if you want people to be engaged in the near falls and emotionally invested. The crowd reaction to Ciampa turning on Gargano on Saturday at the NXT TakeOver Chicago show proves my point. That while people say the stupid phrase, kayfabe is dead, and it's stupid because it means nothing. People use it way too broadly. It's stupid. Kayfabe may be dead. Everybody in that crowd is smart enough to know that they were watching a show. But if you give them a story to believe in and you play it with a straight face and you don't self-mock yourself and you don't take that approach to it, you can get the crowd to buy in all the way during their time there. And the crowd reaction to that turn showed it. That is exhibit A for why that you can still, even in this, quote, kayfabe is dead era, do what every wrestling promoter who was smart and made money did, which is give people an immersive, believable storyline without throwing in their face that what you're watching is just a show.
4 days later, I'm still pissed off. But real quick, and then move on. Be fair to Jesse, he said in his email that Tyler fending off an attacker with a dirty mop is as equally valid a form of wrestling as the DIY breakup. So he's not saying they're the same thing, and I earlier said that he said they were the same thing. So.
Oh.
And then he also says if they're executed correctly. So
both shouldn't be on the same card, I would argue. I mean, I, I, well, I don't. The mob thing, no, I have less of an issue with.
You know, if Santino was on that card and did that spot, like, in the second match of the night, you know, and he's wrestling, you know, Kozlov or something, and you're never going to make money with, or not make money, he made a ton of money with Santino, but you're never going to, you know, try to push him in the main event or do anything like that, and then it's fine, even on pay-per-view, even on that show, you know, that's not a big deal. But like you said, you got the Usos and the number one contenders for the tag team championships, which are on the line. It's just, it was just too cute, just too silly, and I don't know why that's why that's like such a big deal to be like against something, and it's just so stupid. Like the topic, like, okay, you know.
Well, no, absolutely. And
yes, I have a podcast. I've had a podcast since 2008, like before everybody had a podcast.
Except so, Bruce Mitchell.
You know. Yeah. Oh, no, before everybody, every Tom Dick, and I was the first.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Oh, you guys, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got to go to another break. We're way behind, but that's fine. Good conversation. I do want to let everybody know that our VIP sale, we haven't had a VIP sale launch since January, and so we've got another one. It's a great deal, 90% off your first month as a VIP member with no further obligation. What that means is for $1, you can become a VIP member. I've been doing this for nearly 30 years. Started as a print newsletter on a typewriter, mailed out to people, have evolved with all the different changes in technology, and the VIP website is awesome because it allows us to present to you nearly 30 years of what we've done the second you sign up. We've got almost all of our back issues dating back to the late 1980s available. A weekly chronicle, a contemporaneous, to use the term of the month, a contemporaneous coverage of what was going on at the time in real time. What did we think of The Rock when he was Rocky Maivia? What were we saying about his upside and his potential? What were we saying about superstar Steve Austin in ECW or stunning Steve Austin in WCW about his upside? Was he being underutilized, or did we think this guy will never make it? Like, it's just fascinating. You can go through over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, pick the time that you first became a fan, and read week by week not only what was happening, but what we at the Torch were saying with this style of coverage. This is how we've always covered wrestling since day one. This style of analysis in print in those newsletters. And you can dive in and go read about the first pay-per-view you ever watched, read my report and star ratings, roundtable reviews from the Torch staff. That's just one of dozens of things that I could take a half hour on to pitch with VIP. I'm really proud of what we built and the incredible depth of just thousands of hours of audio and over 1,500 back issues of the Torch newsletter. When you go VIP, you get over 15 VIP-exclusive podcasts most weeks, in addition to ad-free, plug-free versions of this PW Torch livecast that we do throughout the week, the 5-6 episodes that we do. You get over 15 other podcasts that are VIP-exclusive on a wide range of formats and topics. You get a wide range of opinions and points of view from a diverse staff that's willing to argue with each other to try to figure out what makes this business work and where it's going right and where it's going wrong. A new show by Sean Radican with co-host Mike Rowe this week is a new show that's called WWE Future Past, where they spend 15 minutes on each of three wrestlers, one who's on the main roster, and they talk about his journey through the indie scene. What did they think of him back in the day before he got to WWE, he or she, and talk about their path. This week, Kevin Owens was the topic. So they talked in 15 minutes about his whole journey. They've been following him from the beginning, and they talk about his highs and lows on the indie scene. Then they pick two wrestlers on the indie scene who have potential to become WWE main roster wrestlers. And they evaluate, do they have what it takes? How will Vince react to them? What have they done to make us think they have a chance? What do they need to improve on? What's working for them and against them? Jay White and Kyle O'Reilly were the two indie wrestlers covered this week. So that's good, a regular feature now for VIP members, about 45 minutes, 15 minutes for each wrestler, and they pick one match that's available on YouTube from each of the three wrestlers to evaluate. So you can watch them and then hear their analysis of that match and what it says about their ring charisma, presence, style, how far they are along as a wrestler. So much else comes with a VIP membership, including retro radio shows, the Everyday Weight Color Hotline, and much more. You can get full details ongoing VIP at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. And use coupon code May 2017. That's May 2017, and that will get you $9 off a VIP subscription. So if you apply that to a 1 month, it becomes $1 for the whole 30 days, not just May, but you get 30 days from the day you sign up. Or you can apply $9 off to a 3 month or 1 year subscription, and you get an even bigger savings because we build in discounts if you commit to 3 months or 1 year out of the gate. So check that out. It's pwtorch.com/govip. Coupon code May 2017. Well, and you put that in the promo code box at the bottom of the order form, and that'll take $9 off your order. And that page tells you not only what comes with the VIP membership, but also has a bunch of testimonials from VIP members. If you don't get excited about being a VIP member after reading what our members say about what they get out of a membership, I'll be surprised. So check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. And yes, all those VIP podcasts are all on one feed. We also break them down into separate feeds by category as a convenience to VIP members too, if you want to have multiple VIP feeds for current events, retro shows, individual shows. And they're all compatible with iTunes and popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android. We also have an ad-free mobile site that gives you an app-like experience and access to all our new VIP content throughout the week. So we've got all bases covered. Check it out. We'd love to have you as a member. Now's a great time to sign up with so much happening in the next month. We will be back right after this with more of the Midweek Flagship. I'm Wade Keller, along with Travis Bryant. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Travis Bryant from the East Coast Cast. Travis, tell people about your show, which will be on later today, when they can listen live, and how they can access recent editions too on demand.
Yeah, you can find everything you need really at eastcoastcast.com. You got 6 years of archives of live shows that we've done on Blog Talk Radio. When are we on? 6:30 Eastern every Wednesday. So tonight we'll be on in a few hours. Yeah, really. 6:30 Eastern. We go live usually till about 9 or 9:30. Well, about 9. Whenever NXT goes off, because we're usually doing a live listen or a live watch with NXT. So we're taking calls for a long time, and we've done this for live for 6 years now. And, yeah, eastcoastcast.com is where you can find the show. And at East Coast Cast on Twitter. And we actually have merch now of if you've seen all our like artwork and stuff over the years, or our fan logo or our logos and things like that, we're selling them, and you could get them on a T-shirt or a mug or a onesie, all kinds of stuff, phone case, laptop deal. And just go to tpublic.com, TEEPUBLIC.com, and search Seahawk. Cam set up the account, CEEHawk, and yeah, it's really cool. Just go there to look at the logos, and if you're inspired to buy something, then that'd be great. But yeah, so eastcoastcast.com, tpublic.com, search Seahawk, and yeah, that's everything I got to plug.
In this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which, by the way, I plugged VIP before the break, the new VIP Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, it's a print copy. You can subscribe, pwtorch.com/print copy, and get a 12-page print newsletter delivered to your mailbox every week. That same newsletter goes up online as a PDF and an all-text edition on the VIP website, and the digital version of it comes with the VIP membership in addition to all our podcasts and the ad-free version of pwtorch.com and the ad-free version of this livecast. The newsletter this week, Travis, it features a column from you, and it is about the state of NXT's main roster. The headline, "The Retooled, Resurging NXT Main Scene." A preview of that column a little bit, without giving everything away, but preview a little bit your thoughts on that coming out of NXT TakeOver on Saturday, and what we're seeing in terms of, like you say, the retooled, resurgent NXT main tier?
Yeah, just NXT as a brand has just been on a bit of a slump. And I say slump in quotes just because it just was the natural progression. They lost key talents in all their divisions in a very, short amount of time. So they're rebuilding from the ground slowly but surely. And a few months I noticed that the women's division seems to be, shaping up with Asuka and Ember and Nikki Cross, and I started noticing with the main roster, like, oh, they have five, six guys that are absolute bona fide NXT main event talents now. Like, Bobby Roode isn't going to be counted on to just hold everything together, trying to piecemeal feuds with, Let's Go Jose, or No Way Jose, and things like that. So I just picked a few guys that stood out to me, and I'll give the number one guy away, Aleister Black. He's my guy. That guy's special. And I name a couple others and talk about why I think they're so great and, great for the main event scene of NXT.
Very cool. So VIP members can look forward to reading that, and you can go VIP, coupon code May 2017. We have an email regarding what happened Saturday with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. Brian Alston, 26-year PW Torch VIP subscriber, says, "Hi, Wade and Travis. In the past 2 weeks, we had two WWE tag teams, Golden Truth and DIY, break up. Which breakup was the best, and give a brief opinion on each person's intermediate 6 to 12-month future." I was actually surprised that there wasn't a little coordination between NXT and WWE to avoid doing a very similar angle, within a 7-day period, within a 5-day period. It did feel a little bit... Ciampa turn on Gargano happened in the ring, I think it would have felt a lot closer to, Goldust and R-Truth. In terms of execution. But nevertheless, they both happened. One is giving, it seems, Goldust a resurgence in his career, another kind of maybe final chapter, a final push. I don't know what it'll do for R-Truth. With Gargano and Ciampa, it sets them up as single stars as opposed to a tag team. And a lot of people are upset by that. They thought their best chance to get a push on the main roster was going to be as DIY, a tag team on the main roster. Should DIY fans be upset or encouraged by the fact that apparently the powers in WWE, Triple H, Vince McMahon, whomever, believe Gargano and Ciampa maybe have main roster top tier singles potential, and that's why they did this breakup?
That's interesting to hear. Like, when you hear the rumor that was the reason. Like,
yeah.
Wow, that's cool to kind of takes the sting out of the breakup just to know that that's even considered, because I think a lot of us wouldn't think that would be even a consideration. Does that mean one goes to 205 Live and the other goes to, SmackDown, and which they perceive as the, not the go-to brand? They consider that main roster single stars, or however they phrase it. Yes, but I think even still, I think that would be more than a lot of people. Maybe not 205 Live. That's probably right in line.
Let me ask you this: let me sneak in a question to you. Would Johnny Gargano be the best wrestler to build 205 Live around as a babyface compared to anybody else right now in the 205 roster, including Austin Aries? Would you draft, if you're trying to build a cruiserweight show for WWE, draft Johnny Wrestling as your number one babyface over anybody currently on the 205 Live roster?
Yeah, because then Austin Aries is not built to be, your number one babyface. He can be. But ultimately, I don't think that's what he's, his best usage would be as a number one heel. But that role is filled, and he can, again, as I said, he can do the babyface deal. But that would give you an opportunity to turn Austin. You get even Neville, I think, is not that he's been good as a heel, but I think because of his style, he just fits better as a babyface, and he could be a number two babyface to Gargano's number one. Just, and you know, you got Gallagher and Eris, a strong, you know, 1-2-3, you know, babyface lineup, and Austin Aries anchoring the heel side. That's one scenario, but.
Yeah.
To answer your very specific question, yes, I think Johnny could easily be the number one babyface on 205 Live and bring a lot of eyes to it.
Yeah, I think he has that kind of appeal, too, and he hasn't been defined down in any other way. Not that Austin Aries had been, but, you know, Neville, I mean, as much as he remade himself, he was kind of the bland, flashy guy who lost some matches on the main roster before he came back and became the top heel. And a lot of the other guys, TJ Perkins and even Jack Gallagher, there's something about them where you're like, well, we can't build a whole division around them. And Johnny Gargano, I think you could just say 205 Live, the Johnny Gargano show, just like we're advocating, a lot of us are kind of advocating SmackDown, ideally this year would have been the AJ Styles show. You know, hold on to the title, turn babyface, and just have the show be what Vince envisions Raw being with Roman Reigns. It's a show about people trying to knock AJ off the pedestal.
A lot more powerful.
What's that?
Tell you what, it would make his catchphrase a lot more powerful.
It would, absolutely. So I think the performance on Saturday night was just amazing with Ciampa and Gargano. I mean, the way that they just came across as just the greatest of friends. There was even physical, you know, contact. They're just celebrating. They were just like. They just milked that bond and that relationship so much. And so when Ciampa turned, it was just, I mean, people were just like, felt this sense of betrayal because DIY represented something that was real. And the storyline, I think, tapped into people's real emotions in terms of something that feels like a real bond and then betrayal. And people reacted emotionally to that because that story was told so well. And Ciampa... I was talking to one wrestler who said maybe Ciampa should have left the scene a little sooner, just kind of critiquing the execution of it. I mean, I think it worked out well, too, though, having Ciampa just hang around and just...
I think him sitting there watching the whole thing and almost like punishing himself, like, nope, you gotta sit there and look at what you did and see your you know, like, he probably, you know, like, I love this guy, and, you know, he's my main man, but I've got to move on for whatever heelish ways. But, you know, it's something in him that's punishing himself. Like, nope, look at what you did, and, you know, never forget what you did in this moment.
Do you think that Tommaso Ciampa has main roster, top-tier heel potential on SmackDown or Raw? Could he feud with AJ Styles for the championship, you know, a year from now? Travis.
Man. Yeah, no, I'm here, Wade.
I know. I'm just making sure. I know pauses are dead air is you're not scared of, and I admire that, but I don't know. I mean, it is. It's something to pause. Here's what I would say. I'm really interested to see the next few weeks of NXT TV to find out if that is something that we can, if that's something that we can look at and say, all right, this guy's got it in him, you know, because he's been on quite the journey,
yeah.
You know, in
you know
in
what,
the yeah.
Wade, I'm just as I think about it, a little ashamed of that pause. Like, you know what, it's almost like the society, you know, like, well, look who's the champion now. Like,
yeah.
Well, why can't The Rock be president in 2020? Like, well, you don't have to, like, know things to, you know, figure it out, but at least he's a decent, you know, person. Why can't Ciampa be the top heel on SmackDown going after AJ a year from now? Yeah,
yeah.
You know what? Absolutely. He's so much more qualified in the traditional ways. God, that sounds yeah. As Jinder Mahal is, he's much better wrestler, much better character. He knows his character. At least he could, you know, he's a professional, does 12-year, not the gender, some rookie, but
yeah.
You just don't, you know, I don't, does he talk wrestling and live wrestling and all that, you know, kind of stuff that wrestling wrestlers love? You kind of get the idea Ciampa does.
Yeah, yep. All right, let's go to our next break. When we come back, I want to ask you about Goldust, and then we'll do more emails or phone calls. So everybody, hold tight. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at the Wade Keller, T-H-E-W-A-D-E-K-E-L-L-E-R. Follow our brand at PW Torch. Follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. We've got updates. We talked about it with a caller earlier, but the Michael Bisping situation, the whole middleweight division, and the TJ or the Cody Garbrandt back injury, and what's next for TJ Dillashaw, and what Demetrius Johnson has to say about that. A lot of news today in the Wednesday update. There's a daily news digest every day that'll keep you up to date with one click on all the top stories and some of the smaller stories and future fight developments, with some analysis thrown in every day at MMAtorch.com. So if you're a hardcore MMA fan or a casual MMA fan, the Daily News Digest keeps you in the loop, along with key quotes from podcasts and fighter interviews. So check that out, along with live fight coverage, fight preview articles, and exclusive columns and flashbacks. That's MMAtorch.com. Haven't mentioned yet our PWPodcasts.com site. Definitely encourage you to check that out if you like wrestling podcasts, and I assume you do if you're listening an hour into this show. As you know, a lot of wrestling personalities host podcasts. Tony Schiavone reflects on his days in WCW. Bruce Pritchard tells stories. Steve Austin tells stories and reacts to today's scene. On and on. Well, you might not have time to listen to all of them, or you might pick and choose which ones you want to listen to based on subject matter. PWPodcasts.com has you covered with written recaps, in-depth recaps of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. Plus, when wrestlers do interviews, we've got newsworthy quotes. We pull them out and present them to you in headline form when we deem them worthy. And that is all updated on a daily basis, multiple posts per day. It should be part of your daily routine. If you check wrestling websites, even if you don't, make pwpodcast.com a daily stop. We are also always looking for volunteers who want to contribute to the site. It's a really cool site. Andrew Socek's just doing a great job working behind the scenes to coordinate our team and edit and post a lot of the material. And we'll get back to you. We'd love to hear from you. And one of us will get back to you if you email us. You can direct your email to me to begin with kellerwade@gmail.com. If you're interested in contributing to pwpodcasts.com. We've got a few more podcasts that we don't have covered, and we're always looking for people on standby, too, in case somebody can't file a report on a certain week. So email me, kellerwade@gmail.com, if you're interested in contributing to that very cool site. Check it out, pwpodcasts.com. Travis, the emailer Brian wanted to know our thoughts on what the turn meant for Goldust and R-Truth also. What's the upside for Goldust, and do you think this angle was done mostly for Goldust or also for R-Truth?
Well, I think it's done for both. I think just visually and just historically, Goldust is, you know, reaching back for something we've seen, and so it just seems like it's. But R-Truth is there too. You know, he's a part of this. There is no turn with. There is no Goldust without R-Truth, at least in this, you know, in this storyline. R-Truth gets to cut promos. R-Truth got a decent promo. I saw it on Instagram. I don't know where the hell I saw it, and where he just was like a guy that got, you know, turned on. Where he just was pissed off and was like, don't let me see ass, like, just kind of straight up, like, you know, it's like, okay, well, I like this a lot better than, you know, terrible dancing, you know, smiling through. So it's just as much for, I think, but visually Goldust gets to do the golden golden carrot pictures or 24 carat pictures thing. And I just think it's, I'm looking at this like, wow, this seems like, you know, like in 96, it was, you know, him saying films and all that kind of stuff was like, all right, that's a part of the gimmick. But now, like, you're even, it's just, I don't know, it just seems kind of old. And, you know, like, I'm not sure if kids will get what's happening.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll just see everybody else reacting if other people react. I don't know.
That's the thing. There's a lot of cool things.
I mean,
there's a lot of cool things I watched as a kid that I didn't get. I remember watching David Letterman when I was young, and I didn't get what was going on. I didn't know, is Chris Elliott serious? Like, is this guy, is it a bit, or is he crazy? Like, I didn't get it. It went a little over my head, but I was intrigued, and it helped me, you know, develop a kind of a, you know, an understanding and appreciation of sense of humor. So sometimes, you know, play to adults and let the kids, you know, kind of eavesdrop. And I think kids are attracted to things that aren't catered just to them, but are a level higher that they're, you know, trying to figure out. So I'm interested in that. I mean, they're both in their 40s.
And when I say kids, I mean like somebody that's 16 that just wasn't around to get, let alone the 96, the 20, the 02, the, you know, version, let alone 96.
Well, when I say...
I just don't know, like, with him talking about the movies and like that lingo just isn't around. Like, I'm watching movies on my phone and, you know, studios, and I know those things exist. It's just, I don't know if it connects as well anymore.
When I said when I was a kid I didn't get Letterman, I meant when I was like 17 too. So.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. I didn't, but. That'd be.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe you didn't get Letterman at 17.
I
got Conan.
No. I was more like an 11-year-old kid just going, what's going on here? I don't get him. I've never seen anything like him, but I was intrigued. But, okay. Let's hear. Let's go to another call. Appreciate everybody holding patiently. Let's go to Jay in Tampa. Jay, what's on your mind today?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I think.
What's up, man?
It seemed like gender is like the first world champ with, literally no merch in the WWE shop. I just learned that Travis even has more merch than the world champion WWE at this point.
Jeez. And but, mine's on sale for like the next 60 hours, like 30% off or something. So
I'm going to check that out. But, I saw Talking Smack and they had, Noonday return on there, make their presence.
My understanding is Big E was weird.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was being Big E, I guess. He was saying some off-the-wall stuff, but...
All about foot fetishes.
They didn't really speak much on the current talent or anything like that, but I was hoping to see maybe them kind of go a different direction, but looks like they're going to come back with the same thing. As long as they, you know, I'm kind of fine with whatever. I just would want to see them a bigger push. At least I feel like Kofi has put a lot of time in. Only if Vince was interested in breaking into the South African market, then we might be able to see something with Kofi. I don't know. But my question was about NXT. I know they were talking about, you know, we've been talking lately about the Indian market and stuff like that. Has Triple H had any updated information, or do they share their information about what they have been able to do in the Japanese market? Because, I mean, even with what they did with NXT as far as Asuka and Nakamura and stuff, those two kind of ran as champs pretty much the entire year last year for the most part with NXT. Did they have like a bump in the WWE network for that, or is it just pretty much the same?
I mean, they give the international numbers. I don't think that they've tapped the Japan market as much as they hope they would or hope they can, but the thing is there's a really established group in New Japan and many satellite smaller groups in Japan, and WWE, I think, is destined for the foreseeable future to be the American novelty promotion. That, yes, it's a major league, and yes, they've got the bigger budget, and they can hire away some of our top stars, like Nakamura and Kenta, Itami, but they're not, from a cultural standpoint, they're not going to be able to be what New Japan is to Japan. They're going to be something different from in the business landscape of pro wrestling. I think that they're going to, they might get, again, it's all the technology of the network and how permeated that technology is. People paying for a subscription for something has been normalized here with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and other more specific subscription-based streaming services through Roku boxes and Apple TV and smart TVs. In Japan, that's just it's a different scenario. And that's what WWE stresses all the time is they learn. And it's weird because they act like this was something they didn't know when they were touting, you know, we're going to have 2 million subscribers and then grow to 3 by the, you know, 2-week mark. You know, I mean, exaggerating. But they had, like, crazy expectations. And now they're kind of like, oh, we're learning as we go that cultures are different and technology is different and those cultures look at technology differently and we have to learn about each market individually and do thorough research. And in some markets it's harder to get into than others. I mean, it's a tough journey.
The market,
I mean,
in their language.
Like, yeah, wow, yes, that too.
Just want to read and, you know, listen to English all the time.
So are they trying to conquer the world and are they making inroads? I mean, yes, but they're not, you know, the network model, it's not something where WWE has done great numbers in Japan despite. But, you know, well, I mean, the Nakamura push, it might turn out in retrospect they delayed pushing Nakamura to the main roster because there was some technological advancement or permeation breakpoint in the network in Japan. But that's something that I haven't heard of at this point, Jay.
Okay. My last question was, you guys just was touching on Goldust, and I wanted to ask about that because I know even if he goes back and kind of touch on some of the things that he did in the 90s and things like that, I don't know if they're going to go as far or get as close or as edgy as they possibly could. But on the other side of on NXT, it seemed like they're starting to ramp up the Velveteen Dream, if you will, with Patrick Clark, and I've went to a couple of live shows and already kind of see what that gimmick consists of, and is very close to what Goldust was already doing back then. Do you think there's some connection between the two, or that's just a coincidence?
Go ahead, Travis.
I think it's just a coincidence. I think maybe someone was inspired by, you know, like maybe Goldust himself, like sees Patrick Clark down in developmental, and you know, like, oh man, it's, you know, getting me remembering what it used to be like to be, you know, edgy and have an androgynous kind of character and all that kind of thing, or someone in management or someone on the writing staff, wherever, you know, or it could just be complete absolute coincidence.
Yeah,
like no inspiration. You know, it was just saying, hey, it's time to do something with Goldust. It's not a ton you can do with the Goldust character besides he's either like silly, funny, you know, effective at times, you know, funny comedy guy, or you know, weirdo. Well, I mean, weirdos on all of them, but or weirdo heel, somewhat sadistic, and you know, kind of a thing. And of course, not Jay. They're not going to even go anywhere near what they used to do with that character. So I'm interested in what do they do then, like in this, you know, in this environment with the limits that they have.
Along the lines of the question about featuring Japanese talent trying to get into Japan, Sam from Australia says, in the context of WWE seeking to expand to international markets such as China and India, is it counterproductive to make Jinder Mahal a heel just because he is foreign? I don't know, he's British Columbian, but he's from Vancouver. Not only is this an issue about Jinder's character development or lack thereof, but this is 2017, and we're still watching a WWE where Punjabi Championship celebration is heelish, yet a Las Vegas-themed festival of friendship is inherently babyface? Is this a reflection of an underlying racism from Vince McMahon or the nature of the WWE audience, or am I reading too deep into the circus of pro wrestling?
Yeah, I think they're the same thing. I don't think a lot of it is just inherent biases and bigotries, but they're so second nature that people, if you brought that up, they go like, what? Like, I don't consciously go brown guy bad, you know, and make these kinds of assumptions. I just think it's a simplistic way of storytelling. And within that comes certain biases, but I don't think that's the driving factor.
Yeah, do you think they have to be careful how they frame and present Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers if the goal is to make them babyface heroes in India to the Indian fans, or is it insulting?
I don't think that's the goal.
Yeah, well, okay.
The goal is to present him as a heel, and the Indian fans just go, oh, yeah, he's a heel, but he's our heel, and I want to go see him when he comes to town.
So does
and watch him on TV when that channel gets established in my neighborhood.
Do you think Vince McMahon thinks, I run a live event in India, I headline with Jinder Mahal, and is his instinct to put Jinder against a babyface and just see what happens, or is his instinct to put Jinder against a heel so that fans can cheer Jinder?
I think they put him in against I don't know, Wade.
Yeah, that's
man.
What I'm curious about. Because here's what I'm. I think they have to be careful how villainous they make him. If the goal is for him to go to India and be a hero, even if fans have some reservations, are like, yeah, he's a jerk, but he's our jerk, and we're happy that he's getting a push and he's had success, and he doesn't do right. things every, you know, in all the ways we'd like him to do, but heck, oh my God, look at him, you know, he's great, he represents our country.
I get the 50-50 toss. You can either be good or you can be bad. So, it was one or the other. It's not like they chose that out of 50 options.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, thanks for rolling. What's on your mind this afternoon?
Hey, Wayden, Travis, my question for this afternoon is, in light of WWE's chronic use of this finish last night, should there be a moratorium on roll-up finishes for a while? Again, I ask this because there were three separate matches in which a roll-up finish was used.
It does seem, Travis, that they've been going to the same finish over and over again. We had the women where there'd be a distraction and the woman would get rolled up. That was the finish du jour for a couple months there, where almost every match ended that way, comically. Now we have wrestlers climbing to the top rope and somebody at ringside distracting them, leading to a recovery by the wrestler in the ring who's legal. That's being overdone. And the roll-ups, I have less of an issue with it if it's a one-off coincidence. We should have compared notes. But I do think it's a weird thing when it seems like there isn't an eye on the whole show when they book finishes, where everybody's aware of the other finishes. And at some point, it does become a little, cartoonish.
Yeah, it's just trends. I think they just get, as a staff or as a writing crew, somehow it just gets past the agents, or it's the agents that are coming up with. I don't know how that necessarily works all the time, but it does get. Especially with the women's distraction stuff, that just over and over and over again, just week after week, match after match, both brands, it was, comical in a lot of senses. It hasn't gotten anywhere close to that with the roll-up finishes, but it is something that you notice when you see, two matches in a row in that, or three matches on the same show had that finish. You go, wait a second, they're just trying to keep a lot of, people strong and cop-out roll-ups. And it's not a cop-out. It's a leverage pin. It's a legitimate, bona fide wrestling maneuver. But it leaves a lot of questions, and it's very ambiguous in a lot of ways. And it's sold that way. The wrestler that gets rolled up is like, what? I'm not hurt. I'm not knocked out. Damn, that leverage.
I am kind of amazed they did that with Sammy and Breezango on the same show. I mean, it's almost, it was a more extreme version of the Goldust heel turn and the Ciampa heel turn, where you're like, did they really just in the same week do something that we hadn't seen for more than a year. Like, they just decided to do them both on the same week. Roll-up finishes out of nowhere in the first 20 seconds. That's something you do once, and then you do it again 4 months later, or 2 months later. You don't do it three times in one show. I was okay with both Breezango members doing it, because that's kind of part of the shtick of, I can't believe the Usos got caught twice. That was sort of the point. But why have Sammy do it earlier in the show, too? That was not a choice by them. Anyway, Kylan, do you have a second question for us today?
Yes, I do. My second question is in regards to Finn Balor. Do you believe that WWE will intentionally waste Finn Balor by having him predictably lose to Brock whenever he faces him, if he does win the Fatal 5-Way match at Extreme Rules?
Did I mishear what you were saying?
I think you slightly misheard. I said, do you think WWE will intentionally waste a potential booking opportunity by having him lose to Brock when you look, he just got back? And
Kylan, what makes you think that they would intentionally hurt Finn Balor? I mean, they seem to be giving him a push. So I guess I want to understand what you think their motivation would be to just intentionally hurt Finn Balor. Are you saying they would have a good reason for doing it, or they would do it out of spite or something else?
Well, because he could be the big new star that everybody wants once Brock is gone, and people are already campaigning for him to be that because he suffered the injury last summer.
Okay. Travis, a lot of people wondering about that Paul Heyman promo with Balor and what that meant. Was that Paul a surrogate promo for Balor to try to build him up so he'll be taken seriously against Lesnar? Was it a red herring because it's going to be Bray or Joe, and we're going to see that over the next few weeks, that each week they kind of make somebody seem like they're the leading contender just to add intrigue to the match? So that's one conversation piece. And then Kylan brings up, and I don't know if he's getting to this or not, or at it this way or not, but do they fear Finn Balor could be a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk, and that he could get in the way of Roman Reigns, the path being clear for Roman? So they would kind of feed Balor to Brock early and have Brock win just to sort of let fans know, hey, this guy's not in contention to be the face of the company.
Yeah. I think that's a legitimate question framed that way. Because when I heard, like, the, you know, starting a few weeks ago, like, no, Finn's going to be the guy to face Brock at Great Balls. Like, well, okay, like, wow. So he's clearly going to, you know, not going to, you know, Brock's not going to drop the Universal Title to Finn Balor and freaking Great Balls of Fire. That's not going to happen. So you immediately go. I don't know if you start thinking, like, you know, in certain, you know, conspiratorial terms, but you go, oh well, they're getting that out of the way early.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the worst idea. Like, and as far as the Paul Heyman promo, like, I don't know why he did it. I think it's important that he did it. Like, wow, where is this coming from? Is this Paul Heyman? Like, let me go out there and sell this guy. Like, trust me, I got it. And, yeah, like, motivations be damned. I don't care. I think the story is Paul Heyman gushing over Finn Balor. Like, basically said he's the one that would give Brock the toughest match. And, yeah.
Yeah. It was a Paul saying Finn Balor's a Paul Heyman guy. Like, is that, was he trying to give Finn a little rub and sold it as, hey, let me give a boost and an acceleration to Finn's push? Yeah, I think
it's Paul saying, let me, to a certain crowd, let me let them understand that I know he's that guy. Like, you know, I think it's, you know, twofold. Like, Paul's going out there letting people know, like, I know who's cutting edge. I know who's you know, I'm ahead of the curve, on guys.
Make and, up for the...
You know, you guys will be in 18 months talking about Finn Balor, and you'll have this promo to look back on, and I'll have already... You know, not that Finn Balor's not coming out of it nowhere now. People know who he is and all that, but, you know, to go out there and just so definitively say, you know, like, you're really the only guy that could give Brock a fight, and he'd still be a victim. He's not saying Brock's scared of him or anything.
Right.
But... You'd be the one that we'd worry the most about and have to game plan the most about. And I think that puts Balor over huge, at least with me. Like, well, wow, this is cool.
And the Paul Heyman brand is, he knows ahead of time who's going to be a big star. You know, I did a Torch Talk with Heyman back in the mid-90s, and he said, Steve Austin is going to be the king of this industry someday. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, Paul has always wanted to be ahead of the curve, and he has a really good track record when it comes to that. He can take somebody who's people don't have their eye on as
even
a top star.
Even his flops, Wade, have like a kernel, like with Fertig, Kevin, whatever, the vampire He was ahead of the vampire curve. Like, oh, yeah, people are going to... You know, a year later, vampires were selling out everywhere.
There you go.
Books and movies and t-shirts and everything.
So speaking of Paul Heyman guys, by the way, Justin Credible was a Paul Heyman guy in ECW. He was in one of the final stages of ECW, you know, one of the final chapters of kind of the different chapters that ECW had. You know, they had the Sabu, Terry Funk, Shane Douglas, Public Enemy era, and then there was, you know, Rob Van Dam whatever. You know, we can... talk about the ECW history. Justin Credible was the main event. Paul went with him as a world champion. Justin headlined some pay-per-views and a lot of house shows. He'll be my guest next week. And we're going to talk on the eve of Extreme Rules. We're going to talk about gimmick matches and extreme matches. And one of the topics that Justin Credible, and we'll talk about a wide range of topics, but one of the reasons I want to invite him back on the live cast next week and have scheduled him is I want to talk about gimmick matches and get a little insight into how wrestlers approach those matches psychologically differently than other matches. And, you know, maybe get some insight into which matches wrestlers not crazy about participating in versus ones that they see as a night off almost, where they look like they, you know, are devastating, but they're not. So anyway, on the eve of Extreme Rules, we'll have Justin Credible on the show to talk about his days in ECW and his participation in various gimmick matches over the years. Travis, is Extreme Rules shaping up as being extreme enough? It's not. I mean, there's a cage match for the tag titles with the Hardys and Sheamus and Cesaro. But otherwise,
seconds.
It's a cane on a pole match, a submissions match, and, I mean, it's like it's not exactly extreme according to the title, you know, the name of the event on the poster. It seems like they're kind of pulling back from that, at least at this point.
Yeah, I wonder how long they're going to go with the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in particular. Like, I could TLC provides you with immediately three matches, maybe even four, because you can do a tables match, you can do a ladders match, you can do a chairs match, and you can do a TLC match itself on one show, if you know, if you so desire. But an Extreme Rules match, you're kind of just forced to, like you said, like come up with stipulations.
10 seconds.
For an entire card that are extreme, and I guess if this wasn't on the pay per view, or if this was, come on, Trav, think of something clever. next year, if this was. You know, dude, I can't think. I'm trying to mock the Great Balls of Fire with another, like, 50s stupid, you know. If this was, like, next year on Johnny B. Good pay-per-view or something, you know, it just doesn't work. I could see Extreme Rules, the May pay-per-view, being rebranded into something different.
Yeah, I could, too. All right, let's go to VIP member Chris in Cincinnati. Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, what's up, guys? I didn't get the call on Sunday, but I actually went to both shows this past weekend. So I just kind of wanted to share what I thought about them.
Absolutely,
being in
yeah.
person. That was actually my first pay-per-view, my first NXT, and my first show in Chicago. So that was pretty dope. I enjoyed the NXT card. Pete Dunne and Tyler.
Are you from around the area, or did you drive in?
I'm from Cincinnati. I'm living in Urbana, Illinois right now.
Okay.
That's like 2.5 hours away, so I just drove away.
Okay. Yeah, nice. Did you stay overnight and do the whole, weekend, or did you go back twice?
No, we went on Saturday and stayed from Saturday to Sunday night, and then we drove back Sunday night after Backlash.
Awesome. Chris, yeah, hit a couple high points from the weekend. We're running out of time here, so just kind of get to what you wanted to share with us from your experience.
All right, sorry. The Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate match, man, those guys, they ripped it to shreds. They really know what they're doing out there. That's probably the best WWE match I've ever seen in person. In general, that was probably the best show. I got a chance to watch it on film back. One thing I noticed about TakeOver is that it actually sounded louder on film than it did in the show. And where I noticed when Bobby Roode came out, he had a hell of a reaction, and it was pretty awesome. His entrance was great. Those two had a great match as well. The ladder match was awesome in person. They got some great reactions and did some awesome spots. And the turn, that was pretty surprising. What you mentioned earlier, they kind of really played up how good friends they were. I loved how during the match, Gargano actually saved him. So, you wouldn't think he had any reason to turn, but he did. Shot us all.
Hey, Chris, let me jump in, just because I do have to run and wrap up the show in a minute, and I don't want to hear you just run down everything chronologically and your thoughts on it. I want to ask you a couple specific questions that I think I'm particularly curious about, having gone to both shows over the weekend. Did you sense that the fan base was different each night, or was similar, kind of a mix of some of the same, some different, or all the same? And then the vibe of the show and the presentation and the way the fans were invested in the product, was it markedly different? Did you kind of notice one night felt like a completely different, almost different company, a different sport, almost a different experience, or were they both WWE products with just a mix of different wrestlers and different angles? Like, did that jump out to you going on back-to-back nights like that?
That actually did jump out to me. I felt like the NXT show, the fans were much more invested. There were a lot less people there, but the buzz and anticipation for some of the matches was just off the charts. The only thing I felt matched on Backlash was probably Nakamura and Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles.
Yeah.
But the fan base that day was Backlash was probably a mix, but the TakeOver was pretty hardcore.
Interesting, yeah. All right, Chris, I do got to run, and your connection's rough with us, too. That's kind of why I was also trying to maybe hone in on a particular item there. But, Travis, the difference between the two brands and the way that the crowd reacts and is invested in the product is pretty remarkable when you're watching on television. And I can imagine in person, it has to feel like, I just think the fan base looks at the NXT product differently than WWE. And I'm on a constant, journey to try to put my finger on exactly what that is. But I think with WWE, people feel who attend approach it a certain way, as this is the established brand and they have to entertain me. Or there's a type of fan who's just kind of buying in, they're eating what they're fed. With NXT, I think there's a part of the fan base, whether they're thinking about the psychology of it or not, are thinking, I'm rooting for NXT to succeed. I'm rooting for the wrestlers to succeed in a way that fans of a minor league, hockey or baseball team root for a player to do well and get called up to the majors. I think they want to have NXT as a brand survive, but they're also rooting for their favorite wrestlers to shine and get noticed and move on to bigger and better things too. It's a it's an interesting contrast when you go, I think, to both shows one weekend.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting with his who was, when he says there were less people, obviously, at the, in a smaller building at the NXT show, but they were much more into everything and anticipating everything. I mean, that, again, whether they're conscious of it or not, it's just NXT is just built in a way that's just, you know, sports-like, and wins matter and matchups matter and anticipation's built in a kind of a traditional way. And, you know, they don't, you know, except for, you know, cutting to people laughing, they don't go against, you know, laughing during the Ciampa Gargano angle at the end. They don't go against that. They don't go against, they don't make people feel like, oh, it's just the show. Like, let's, you know, yuck it up and roll one way and then roll the other way and then, you know, do silly stuff. It shows what making, you know, a serious, you know, show that takes itself seriously and, you know, again, wins and losses matter and all that kind of stuff matters.
All right, I got to wrap up the show on that note. Travis, always a pleasure having you on the show. There's so much we didn't get to. That happened from Friday through Tuesday. The Fatal 5-Way hype, the push of Roman Reigns, the developments on SmackDown last night, the way Nakamura has been portrayed, we could have gotten more into. We had some good emails we didn't get to, some good callers that we didn't get to. So call the East Coast cast tonight and join them, and they'll Travis, you'll cover a lot more topics that we didn't get to on today's show on your show tonight. That's available at eastcoastcast.com. I did get confirmation during the program today that not only is Justin Credible going to be my guest next Thursday to talk about Extreme Rules matches, his days in ECW wrestling them, and gimmick matches. But tomorrow, Stone Cold Steve Austin will be my guest on the live cast. And he watched NXT TakeOver, most of it, and most of Backlash on Sunday. So we're going to get his point of view on those two shows this weekend. I very much look forward to that conversation. Steve Austin, the guest tomorrow. Join us live if you can. You can call the show or email ahead of time a topic or question for Steve about this weekend's events. Send to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. EastCoastCast.com. Travis, any specific topics you want to tease that you're planning to get to tonight, or is it just going to be kind of improvised as you go?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we fly by the seat of our pants. It's whatever you guys want to talk about, really. Call us, tweet us, email us, whatever you want to talk about. Again, to get your merch, go to @EastCoastCast on Twitter or @Travlord. And there's a pinned tweet to the top of both of those Twitter feeds where it's a link directly to all our merch and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, join us tonight, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central.
Excellent. Thanks to the callers we got to. My apologies to those who we didn't. You can go VIP and get ad-free, commercial-free, plug-free versions of this show, plus about 15 or more other VIP-exclusive podcasts each week, a diverse array of shows. You can sign up at pwtorch.com/goVIP. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Our emailer, Sam from Australia, said the $1 special for VIP is criminal. There is so much value on that site, I almost feel guilty taking advantage of it. You can feel guilty or not feel guilty, but we'd love for you to take advantage of it. We'd love to have customers who see what we've created and take part in all the VIP features. And it's there, and the more the merrier. So join us. For $1, just use the coupon code May2017. That's May2017. That gets you in the door for $1. No space there, just May 2017. Use that coupon code as you're checking out on our order form. It takes about 2 minutes to sign up. And then after that, go to pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. That's pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips to get an overview of the VIP site, all the nooks and crannies and deep archives, and also how to subscribe on your Android or iPhone. We walk you through the process if you're not real tech savvy. We give you the key URLs to bookmark, how to create a home screen button so you have the virtual app on your phone for all the VIP content without any ads. All kinds of good things over at pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. You can't get there without a password, so you got to sign up first. pwtorch.com/govip. Coupon code May 2017. And Stone Cold Steve Austin tomorrow. Just incredible. PJ Polacco returning to the show next Thursday. So we got a good lineup scheduled. Last Thursday was Kevin Eck, former WWE creative team member. Check out that show if you haven't yet. Kevin Eck is always one of my favorite conversations of any time that he's on the live cast. I learn about behind-the-scenes happenings in WWE during his time there, essentially during the CM Punk era, and also get his thoughts and insights on the current scene. He was the guest last Thursday. So tomorrow, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yesterday, Pat McNeil and I covered SmackDown, and Monday I covered Raw with callers. A lot to listen to if you haven't listened to it all yet. And here are more details on VIP membership. The retro radio aspect of it is very cool, and here's details on that. As a PW Torch livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. All right, that does it for me. Thanks, everybody. Follow us at PW Torch on Twitter, at PW Podcasts, at MMA Torch. Follow me at The Wade Keller. And join Travis Bryant, today's co-host, tonight, 6:30 Eastern, for the East Coast Cast. You can also listen on demand at a later time and catch up on past episodes of the weekly East Coast Cast at eastcoastcast.com. Coupon code May 2017. We'd love to have you as a VIP member. Check it out for $1. There's not really a good reason not to do this. So check it out. If you like our show and like our brand of coverage of wrestling, there's so much you unlock with the VIP membership. And we are so sure you'll love it, we're willing to essentially give it away for $1 for a full month because we think we'll hook you as a customer and you will be happy being a customer. So check it out. And yeah, thanks, everybody. And until tomorrow with Stone Cold Steve Austin, Wade Keller signing off.